I used to be a runner. My knee won't let me run anymore. Even makes it difficult to walk, but I get on the bicycle and yeah, freedom.
Path between Splashland and along 17, I can't ride it because of goat heads. And I know goat heads are everywhere, but if the city could help in their line across sidewalks to get rid of those goat heads and sweep those places where people really want to ride a bike, that'd be great.
So far, I feel like Alamos is fairly comparable to the other places I have lived, which isn't super great for biking, but definitely the wide streets are a difference, and that can make it feel a little more safe because you have some different distance from the cars. But at the same time, it can also feel like then they're not paying as much attention and not being as careful around you and going faster.
Welcome to The Outdoor Citizen. I'm Maddie Alborn. Welcome to part two of our series, Bicycling in the San Luis Valley. This episode is titled, If It's Safe to Bike, People Will Do It. In our ongoing examination of bicycling in Alamosa and around the greater San Luis Valley, we will explore the roadways, both the city streets and intersecting highways, and just how safe our bicycle corridors are, and how safe people feel while riding along these corridors. For some, riding along the highway sounds like a terrifying endeavor. For others, it's often just another Tuesday. Even riding in the city streets can feel claustrophobic and can hinder or even prevent cyclists and pedestrians from reaching Alamosa's miles of trafficless trails. Despite hearing from just a few voices throughout this episode, a bike survey we designed is quick and to the point and aims to address cycling and pedestrian access in all corners of the valley. We encourage anyone and everyone to take the time and tell us about your relationship with bicycles. Tell us what you think is working and what can be done to make the San Luis Valley a friendlier place for bicyclists and pedestrians. This series is a deep dive on the current culture of cycling in the San Luis Valley, no doubt. But part of our approach to this series of stories is to better understand why Alamosa doesn't have more bicycle access, despite having quite a lot of room for it. Alamosa's downtown master design plan is still years away from where it will eventually be. For now, though, we want to better understand why it's taken this long. In part one of our series, Brian Pucciarella, a member of the City of Alamosa's Bicycle Working Group, noted how relatively easy it would be for Alamosa to build out its bicycle infrastructure given its wide roads, all while maintaining a safe middle ground for both bicyclists and the vehicles who often have to unavoidably share the road with one another. Here's Brian on just how the numbers don't quite add up for pedestrians.
So one thing I think that is shared through all of the towns in our valley and across the West is we have really big roads. Now, the only logical explanation I've heard for this is we used to get a lot more snow and we needed somewhere to store it. But that's not really the case anymore. We only have maybe like 5, maybe 10 snow days a year where we have to store snow, and it melts out pretty quick in the valley here. So in Alamosa, like, we have really big roads. So I'm just going to give an example. On 2nd Street, which is the next street that's going to be repaved in Alamosa, there's a 75-foot right-of-way. There's a 50-foot road with parking on both sides. So that means with 8 feet of parking, each lane is 17 feet wide. That is massive, absolutely gargantuan. So the highway coming into town is only a 12-foot lane. In our lanes inside of town are up to 17 feet wide, if not bigger. So they're huge. So there's space for bike lanes. And not only that, if we go, I'm gonna quote some studies here. If you go from a 12-foot lane to a 10-foot lane, you can reduce crashes and fatalities by 50%, going from 12 to 10. And we have 17-foot lanes in Alamosa. There are a lot of opportunities for making our roads much more safe, much more pedestrian friendly, much more cycling friendly without doing much. one of the larger trends we've seen in the U.S. since the 1980s is a concentration of safety for the driver. And so as that happened, we increased the width of our roads, and we increased the width of our kind of safety margins on the side of the road. So if you spin off in a crash, you don't hit a tree, you just spin off into the side of the road now, right? So what's happened is as we've made roads safer for vehicles, it's made roads more dangerous for pedestrians and cyclists and anybody who happens to be on the side of the road. Basically, as you make roads wider and safer, people go faster. It's pretty simple. It's normal behavior. It's not necessarily deviant or anything like that. This is just entirely predictable behavior.
Jim Grant is a daily bicycle commuter and someone you'll hear from in this episode. Who better to give us that type of insight than someone who commutes on their bicycle every day? Jim's commute is about 5 miles, Monday through Friday. It is a routine he's kept up ever since he moved to Alamosa and the San Luis Valley from California some 20 years ago. He rides most days, except when there's too much snow on the ground. Compared to commuting in Southern California, Jim says the valley skies are a whole lot more blue and the roads are filled with fewer cars. And he's not alone. There are others in the valley who ride on a daily basis, and because they do, they have a good sense of the roadways, the intersections between bicyclists and motorists, and what it is about bicycling in Alamosa that is both enjoyable and aggravating.
I think if you're a commuter, I think it would be helpful to learn all the bike routes in town, because there are effective bike routes. Ross Street goes from First Street, and you can go all the way south out to, you get out there almost to the rec center, and then you can access the county offices and that stuff out there. And it's a good way to cross the highway as well, because there's a light there.
There's only two ways to get across the highway.
Yeah.
Right.
Safely.
Ross and State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really it. And so as long as you know that, then you just can plan your ride that way.
I feel like traffic is generally courteous. I don't feel like we have people that I'm scared of in terms of not feeling safe around other people. I feel pretty good about that. I do appreciate, again, the fact that we are so rural and we can get away from things.
We'll hear from people who ride every day, like Don Thompson, on what they notice, what they think can be done to improve cyclists' attitudes towards riding in town, and how to reduce negative interactions with motorists.
State Avenue, when they repaved it, they put down bike lanes. The end, right where the most dangerous part is, and they need them.
I ride on North River Road a lot near Alamosa, and drivers are pretty considerate, and we cyclists, I think, try to be considerate too, and try to ride in single file if the road's busy, because I'm also a motorist, so I appreciate when cyclists are riding appropriately. I have had friends, I saw a friend get hit one time right in front of me. It was a farm implement, and I don't think the farmer meant to hit the person, or the person was watching too, but so accidents do happen. So I would just say all of us cycling, we do have to stay really aware. My friend was not hurt badly, thank goodness, but I think we have to really be aware and think of how you feel as a driver, so to be a courteous bicycle person too, but generally I think it's really good here.
While highways are being widened and streets are being repaved, the margin for cyclists like Kurt Kreitner remains the same. To better advocate for cyclists and pedestrians using safe spaces, we have to hear from them. That's why we're talking with officials from CDOT and the city of Alamosa. They need to hear what's being said on the streets too.
First Street and, of course, Victoria now have some nice bike paths, but unfortunately, with the weather we have, and I know they make an effort to get the bike lanes cleaned as soon as they can after a storm, there's many times where the bike path is not a safe place to be because the glass, debris, all the sand and stuff that's over there. So you end up, and it forces you into the lane of traffic, and then you know, that defeats the purpose of it.
Among people's bike wisdoms, like that shared by Grantley Showalter, they say being highly visible, following the law, and strength in numbers are good defenses against motorist and exclusion.
I've been in situations where people are opening car doors into the bike lane, which also doesn't feel safe. But the more I see people on bikes, the more I feel safer, the more I want to get on my bike to make other people feel safer on bikes. And that's going to elevate the levels for everyone who's riding bikes.
So hopefully education will make more people bicycle, make more people safe, have fewer interactions between motor vehicles and bicycles.
We'll be visiting with Tony Caddy, planning and environmental manager for the Colorado Department of Transportation. Marty Jones and Tony will discuss how the state views cyclists and cyclists' access and projects CDOT is creating to improve safety for cyclists. We hope you are enjoying this series. If you have comments, concerns, or have your own bicycle or mobility story that you would like to share, email info@alamosacitizen.com. We also are encouraging bike riders and non-bike riders alike to take our survey. We are conducting this survey with the hope of establishing a baseline set of data for cycling in the San Luis Valley that will be the first of its kind. You can find the survey on alamosacitizen.com homepage, on flyers around town, and if you're a donating member, in your email inbox in our weekly newsletters. Thanks for tuning in. Now here's Marty Jones and Jim Grant in conversation.
Well, hello, Alamosa Outdoor Citizen listeners. This is Marty Jones with Jim Grant, a bicycling friend of mine. Let me get you started, Jim, by just introducing yourself.
Yeah, my name is Jim Grant. I've been a resident of the Valley for about 22 years. Came here in 2002, been here since.
And Jim, you're an avid bicyclist, and you have been for much longer than I have known you. Tell us a little bit about your cycling experiences.
Oh, gosh. I can remember first, I lived in Southern California when I was growing up, and every once in a while, my parents would take us, or take myself and my brother to a place called John's Bike Shop in Pasadena. And I just remember walking through that shop and just, you know, seeing the race bikes that were up on the racks, and just always thought, you know what, someday I'm going to do that, or, you know, I want to do that. And so that's kind of where that started, or that love of cycling started.
But in your professional career, you've been a cycling commuter for a long, long time.
Yeah, 25, 30 years now, I think, most every day, you know, except when there's too much snow on the ground.
And it's not just been here in Alamosa. We'll talk about that more in a bit, but yeah. Some of the other places that you've worked, you commuted by bicycle.
Yes, back in the day when the kids were young, we lived in Monrovia, California, and I used to ride 10 miles each way to work in Pasadena. I did that 3 days a week, and the other 2 days I would take the bus to rest.
Yeah, well, and take the bus. Did you feel safer on the bus than you did on the bicycle?
Yeah, it depends on the traffic. Yeah, sometimes.
Well, tell us a little bit about the commuting here in Alamosa. You mentioned that you don't like to ride when there's too much snow, but other than that, how do you feel about cycling, commuting bicycle?
Well, it's pretty safe around here, or I should say safer than I remember it being in Southern California, because there was a lot more traffic, you know, in the area in which we lived. So relatively speaking, you know, I feel pretty safe when I'm out on the bike. You know, there's always an occasional close shave, you know, with a car, but most people are pretty considerate and give me a lot of space, and I appreciate that.
And why do you ride? What makes you want to get on that bicycle every day?
Well, I tell folks at work sometimes, because they'll ask, you know, like, why I do that. And, you know, I don't do it just because, it's good for the environment, which it is. But I do it mostly because it gives me a chance to think about things, to kind of work the cares of the day out, you know, either before I get there or when I'm on the way home.
And I know when we're out riding outside of town on the weekends, and hopefully soon we'll be able to do more riding together during the week as well. But when we're out riding around, we go at a reasonable pace for bicycles, but it's much slower than driving a car. Mm-hmm. So we see a lot more. We look at the birds, we talk to the cows and the calves and the sheep and the goats and everything.
Yeah, it's fun that way. I remember, every once in a while when I'm on the way to work, I remember there was one incident, almost got there, and I just realized that the sky was blue. And where I came from, it wasn't often blue. It was more gray, or you couldn't see it at all. And I just remember how grateful I am that, the air that we breathe up here is, it's not polluted, like in a lot of places.
Yeah, so that's kind of a good introduction, actually, mm-hmm. to this topic. The day that we are recording this is a very breezy day. Wind gusts this afternoon are expected to be in the 40-mile-per-hour range. And on a windy day like today, we both rode down here. What do you do as a cyclist to handle the wind?
Well, I think you just do your best in situations like that. Sometimes I'm just going to go, anyway. It doesn't have to do with the wind, but years ago, I remember it was the middle of the winter and I needed to get to work. And it was the morning. I remember the temperature was about minus 11. And I thought, darn it, I'm going anyway. And I rode to work. It's about 4.5 miles. I got there, I remember. And I went into the employee lounge, and the human resources head was there. And I just leaned up against the counter, and I looked over at her, and I said, that was really stupid. Because it was really cold. And so I don't go out in those kind of conditions much anymore. But when it's almost always windy around here, especially during the spring. So sometimes you just kind of got to go.
Yeah, tough it out because you don't have much choice.
Yeah.
And as people are fond of saying, the wind is our hills.
Yeah.
Since we don't have much change in topography on the valley floor, the only way we get experience riding something that is challenging is riding against the wind.
Yeah.
And we just hope that on the way back, we get the downhill rather than the headwind again.
Yeah, yes.
So what do you think generally about the bike infrastructure here in Alamosa?
Yeah, I think we, a few weeks back we talked a little bit about that idea. I just wish that the pavement, generally speaking, in the city was in a little better condition. I know they're working on a number of the roads around here, and I've seen some improvements, but it just seems like there's a lot of streets that are just where the pavement's just falling apart, right? And it's really rough to ride. I think you can tolerate it better in a car because they can handle those kinds of ruts and things a little bit better. But
bigger tires.
Yeah, exactly. I just wish sometimes that the pavement, generally speaking, was in better shape.
And do you feel that, you touched on this briefly, do you think Alamosa is a bike-friendly town? And what about the surrounding San Luis Valley?
Yeah, I think for the most part, yes. I mean, there aren't, I haven't had too many instances where I felt like I was unsafe because drivers either didn't care or were just not paying attention. Most folks are, as I was saying before, very, very good about giving me plenty of space. But every once in a while, there's somebody who it seems doesn't care or, is antagonistic towards cyclists. And in those kind of cases, you can feel very unsafe.
If you could tell the city and the state to make one improvement regarding bicycling, what would it be?
You know, I think it would be education of people who only ride bikes in, as a casual exercise. In other words, it seems like no matter where I am or where I go in the city or in the valley, it seems like there are always people on bikes, but you know, they're on the wrong side of the road, or they don't know the right of way rules, you know, and don't pay attention to them. And I just think it gives those of us who do this a lot kind of a bad name, you know, with folks who are in their cars and who are trying to, you know, drive by the rules when they see cyclists just totally disobeying them, you know, and sometimes resulting in kind of dangerous situations.
All right. Well, I've been talking with Jim Grant, avid bicyclist and bicycle commuter. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And we'll be back after a quick sponsor break.
Are you a member of the Monta Vista Co-op? Now is the best time to become a member and take advantage of the benefits. Propane, oil, crop protection, drone application, farm and ranch supplies, and much more. Visit mvcoop.com and follow us on Facebook and Instagram for all company sales, promotions, community events, and job opportunities. Serving our community since 1949, the Monta Vista Co-op is committed to providing the highest quality products and services. Call us at 719-852-5181 or visit our website, mvcoop.com today. Monta Vista Co-op, community committed, agriculturally driven.
I have bicycled for 55 years in Colorado. I have never been hit by a motorist.
Wow.
Because I do two things. I am visible and I obey the law.
You know, it's something that I think I will do the rest of my life. As long as I can keep upright on a bike, I'll be on a bike, and then maybe a trike. And I think, you know, you mentioned an e-bike a little bit. I think it's a great tool for people who wouldn't be out otherwise. And to be able to adapt as we all get older, just to whatever's going to keep us out there.
Welcome back. We're now joined by Tony Cady, the Planning and Environmental Manager for the Colorado Department of Transportation. Tony, thank you for joining us. We've been talking to a few bicycle riders who navigate the area's highways on their bicycles, including Main Street and 6th Street in Alamosa, which, as you know, is technically Highway 160. Some people feel quite safe riding along the highway as long as they are highly visible and follow the laws. Other people, however, view the highway, specifically 160 through town, as a serious barrier between safe cycling and not-so-safe cycling. How does CDOT address safe access for pedestrians and cyclists to cross highways?
Well, we are getting better at that as an organization. We are working to become a true multimodal organization, and we're working to promote walking, biking, and transit as much as we promote commuting on our cars and trucks and moving goods and services in that fashion. You know, we have two main experiences on our highways, in town and out of town. And, you know, in rural Colorado, most of our main streets are our highways. So that creates a lot of conflict points between those two different road users. In town, we see, you know, a lot of intersections, cross street traffic, stop and start movements. Conditions for pedestrians and cyclists are typically less safe in those circumstances. And those are, you know, vulnerable road users that we are trying to protect when we look at safety enhancements within a community. Outside of town, we see less bike and ped movements, but, you know, the cars are traveling much faster. So any conflict between a bike and ped and a vehicle outside of, you know, a community, a town or a city, is more likely to create much more dire circumstances for, you know, that walker or that cyclist. In town, we have a number of options that we can implement to really improve the safety for bikes and peds, push button crosswalks, mid-block crosswalks with what we call rectangular rapid flashing beacons. And you guys have probably seen those in a couple communities. We just installed one in Monta Vista last summer. And that creates this really highly visible crossing opportunity for bikes and peds to get across mid-block and warn motorists that there are people using the highway that aren't just other cars. And then in other communities, we've installed dedicated bike lanes. That typically means that we have to reduce the available room for vehicles. And so that's a community-based decision. The cities and the counties work together to decide if that's the best use of that road width. And then if they decide to implement a dedicated bike lane, we would then go in and stripe those with those nice wide white stripes and then the green boxes that show motorists that those are safe refuges for cyclists or walkers. So those are just some of the means that we try to protect those users within our communities.
Great. And I know that I have seen some of those mid-block crossings that you're talking about, and you're right, they are very visible, and it would be hard to miss those. How does CDOT view bicycle riders on the highways that connect the various communities in the valley? For example, what we sometimes call Road 10 South or the Waverly Road is actually a state highway. I think it's 370. Is that correct?
That sounds right. Yep.
So some of the highways, some of the paved roads that are connecting our cities and areas in the valley are actually state roads rather than just county roads. So how does CDOT view bicycle riders on the highways that connect the valley?
Well, you know, as an agency, we are trying to encourage the use of our roadways by bicyclists and pedestrian traffic. We're also really trying to encourage more transit-oriented services in our rural areas to get less cars on the road themselves, right? We're getting faced with much more mobility issues, congestion, motor vehicle conflicts. And we know we're not going to be able to build our way out of those issues, and we need to find other ways of solving those problems. And one of the best ways we've found to do that is to just try to take the sheer volume of cars off our roadways. And the only way to do that is to really enhance the ability for people to safely use our roads by walking, by cycling, and by using transit services. That is a struggle in rural Colorado. And one that we're trying to tackle. We're trying to tackle that every planning cycle. We're really trying to implement more bike and ped safety plans and transit plans, focusing on protecting those road users. But you know, the biggest barrier we have is a safe space for pedestrians and bicyclists to use our state highways. And on these rural roads, they have almost no shoulder. So they're almost always in the driving lane, which really creates an unsafe situation. We have a lot of distracted drivers on our roadways these days, and that just creates across the board additional conflicts. But when you have a conflict with a vehicle and a pedestrian or a cyclist, you know, it's almost always a serious injury or a fatality. So while we are trying to encourage the use of our roads by bikes and peds, we recognize that they are very vulnerable road users and that they need to be safe when they're out there. I think, you know, one of the things that we're seeing is that our roads were built in the 1950s and the 1960s when we established the National Highway System. And back then, there was really no consideration for cyclists to be using our state highway system or the national highway system or walkers to utilize our highways to get to and from where they need to get to. And so our roads are pretty narrow. They don't have a lot of shoulders, especially in rural parts of the state or in our mountainous areas where we just don't have a lot of real estate to put a roadway in. And that creates this, you know, this confined space where we're trying to share the road with a vehicle and a pedestrian or a cyclist, which creates that conflict. It creates a lot of stress with the cyclist or the walker, And it creates this situation of unsafe driving for the motorist and swerving into oncoming traffic. So we have a lot of issues that we need to address in the coming years on our state highways. And a lot of that will be aimed at building wider shoulders on our roads to provide this safe refuge for cyclists.
And I noticed that the last time Colorado 370 was resurfaced, they did, in fact, or you guys did, in fact, widen the shoulders so that now instead of being maybe 12 inches wide, they're a good 3 feet wide and very smooth pavement. Thank you very much for having smooth asphalt instead of just a real rough chip seal. So are there plans throughout the state, but we're kind of concentrated in the valley, are there plans for additional shoulder widening projects on state highways through the valley?
Well, the 370 pavement project that you're referring to was paid for with funding that was made available through the state legislature. It was called Senate Bill 267, which provided some additional funds for the state to kind of address some of our preventative maintenance needs across the state. We were in a major deficit. This provided us with some cash to really hit some really necessary projects. And a large part of the funding in that program was aimed at paving our rural roads that hadn't been touched in the last 40 or 50 years. And 370 was a great example of that. And part of that program, it's called the Rural Road Surface Treatment Program, was to widen shoulders as much as we possibly could without acquiring a lot of right-of-way, without impacting ditches or agricultural operations, things like that. So 370 was widened as much as we could afford to in that circumstance. Another great example of those types of projects was the work that was completed on State Highway 17, just north Alamosa.
Yes.
That was a shoulder widening project really aimed at safety. Those shoulders were a hazard for any motors that, you know, went off the road itself and onto the shoulder. They were going to tip over and likely die in a situation like that. And then the widened shoulders would also provide that refuge or separation for walkers or cyclists on their roadway so that they could have some distance between themselves and the vehicles. We have another project planned like that, like State Highway 17, on 285 between Monta Vista and Swatch.
Oh, great.
That has about $35 million in our planning funding for shoulder widening. So we're going to figure out how much we can actually accomplish with that amount of money. We're going to be looking at federal grants to extend the limits of that project as much as we can and try to get it to connect those two communities. But we'll get as much as we can with the money that we have. You know, a lot of the work that we do is, or all the work that we do is really spelled out in our planning documents. And we work with our transportation stakeholder groups. And in San Luis Valley, that is the San Luis Valley Transportation Planning Region. And representatives from all the counties and all the cities within the valley meet with us on a quarterly basis. And we talk about priorities and needs around our areas. And then they help us decide in a long-term situation, they help us look at what the needs are in the next 4, the next 10, and the next 20 years. And then we try to put the money where those needs are indicated. And that's how that State Highway 17 shoulder came about, shoulder project came about. That's how the US 285 shoulder project will come about. Another project that was picked in that planning process was bike and ped bridge across the Rio Grande adjacent to the US 160 bridge.
Oh, that would be great.
So that's in the plan, and that will really enhance the safety because that bridge is really narrow. There's a really poor sidewalk for people to walk on that structure. I would not feel comfortable using it. So that ped bridge will connect to your trail system and will really allow for some mobility in town. Another project in Alamosa is improvements at the intersection at Pike Street and 160. There have been a lot of conflicts in that area. And we're looking at whether a signal would be most appropriate there or some other scenario where we can cross people across 160 to get over towards the campus. And then some safer vehicle movements because there's been a lot of car-on-car accidents in that area.
If you could also repave Pike, that would be really nice.
Yeah, that's
right now it's kind of a rough street. It's a city street. It's not a CDOT issue, but that's great. I'm pleased to hear about all these projects that are planned. The planning documents that you mentioned, can the public access those planning documents?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are two main ones that I would point people to. We 4 years ago, we completed what was called our 2045 long-range transportation plan. And we update those every 5 years. So this summer, we're going to be meeting again with all the counties and our transportation planning regions. So we're in CDOT Region 5, which is the 15 counties in the southwest part of the state. San Luis Valley is all the counties over in that area to really represent the needs in your community. And we're going to be identifying new needs on our roadways and really looking at what are the serve the best interests of the user groups in your community, and then trying to find the funding to deliver those projects. So anyone who's interested in looking at what projects were on the previous plans, the 2045 long range transportation plan is on our planning website at the CDOT main page. And then the San Luis Valley Transportation Plan, which is the regional plan for your area, is on that page as well. We have another planning document called our 10-year strategic plan, and the money that came from Senate Bill 267 is identified in that plan, and all the projects in the valley that are being funded with that program are on there. We're going to be paving a lot of other small rural roads in the valley over the next 5 or 6 years. So we've got some paving on 15 and 368 and 371. So we will be enhancing shoulders and getting more smooth pavement out on the roads in the San Luis Valley in the coming years. But I would point out that, you know, we take public input when we are looking at the needs and communities, and those transportation planning region meetings are open to the public, and they can provide comment on what types of projects they would like to see in their communities.
I
would encourage you, any listeners on this call, to attend those meetings and to make your voices heard.
Do you have a date for those meetings yet?
I do. I don't have it off the top of my head, but
okay.
I could send you an email with that information. The San Luis Valley Transportation Chair is a Alamosa County Commissioner, Vern Hersink.
Okay.
And anyone could reach out to Vern and get the schedule of those meetings as well.
I just have one last question, and that is, you know, the widening that you're doing for 285 and the really nice wide shoulders on US 160 all the way from here to Del Norte and perhaps beyond have made it a lot more comfortable for people to ride bicycles. But I'm wondering, is there any marking that you think could be done or any way to signify to motorists that the shoulder is being used not just for pulling off and changing a flat tire, but by bicyclists and pedestrians as well?
Yeah, no, that's a great comment. And you know, there is signage we can put on the roads that encourage motorists to share the road facility with other user groups. You know, the San Luis Valley is really unique in that we have road signs that talk about, you know, horse and buggies.
Right. Those are important users. Signs too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we could put some signage up between Alamosa and, you know, South Fork or Del Norte, encouraging folks to share the road.
And down to Antonito as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, unfortunately, motorists tend to feel like roads are built for them. And so it's a shift in our culture. It's a shift in our way of thinking about our our highways as not just vehicular roads, but as just travel corridors for any road user. And it really encouraging folks to think about sharing those facilities equitably among all their user groups. And so, you know, signage is one way to do that. There may be some pavement markings we can put on those wider shoulders to really let people know that they should expect to see other road users outside of vehicles. And yeah, just really encouraging that shift in our way of thinking about our roads to be more friendly to bicyclists and pedestrians.
Great. So I guess I do have one more question. Sorry. Are you a bicyclist as well?
I am a cyclist. Yeah, absolutely. I ride 6 days a week. So I'm on the road all the time. Yeah.
And do you feel safe when you're out riding?
You know, less and less so, unfortunately, to be perfectly honest. I spend a lot of time on the road, and I feel less and less safe on our highways and more safe on our county roads. And that's just from the volume of traffic and the speed, right? When you're a cyclist going 20, 25 miles an hour and you're getting, you know, semis and fast moving cars buzzing by you at 70 miles an hour, it feels really unsafe. And just, you know, the noise and the gust of wind and the, you know, the closeness of those interactions is just really made me not appreciate riding on the road that much anymore. So I've taken to riding on county roads more often. I've actually been riding on a lot of gravel roads lately just because I hardly see any cars out there at all. And it just enhances the experience for me.
Oh, yeah. One of the reasons we ride is to go at a slower speed and see the birds and the coyotes and hear all the different sounds of nature.
Hey, I did want to mention one more kind of planning subject that I'd like you all to be aware of. And
sure.
That is, you know, CDOT, not only do we have our own money that we build projects with, but we also administer funds that are aimed at our local governments to utilize to improve conditions on our roads for alternative modes of transportation. And that includes transit services, but also we have a lot of money right now for multimodal options. So we've got some grant programs that are either wholly state funded through Senate Bill 267 or pass through federal funds that are aimed at local communities, local governments to build projects that enhance the usability of our communities by bike and ped users. And some of those are the Transportation Alternatives Program, Safe Routes to School Program, CDOT has a Safer Main Streets Program. And then we also have this fund that's called the Multimodal Options Fund. And all of those programs are for local governments to apply for funding. They compete with each other to build the best project we can get with the funding that we have available. And the money can be used to build new sidewalks or improve sidewalks, to get ADA curb ramps in our sidewalks, to do street crossings like those RRFBs, those rapid rectangular flashing beacons at mid-block crossings. They're aimed at building bike paths and bike lanes, or really anything else that could create a more appealing and safe option than driving our cars in our communities. So I would encourage anyone listening to talk to their local governments about applying for these funds, and they can reach out to me directly, and I can point them to the right information to see when the dates are for applying for those funds and how much is actually available, and whether there's a local match requirement to offset some of the costs. Like the federal funding usually comes with a 10 to 20% local match to be able to apply for those funds. So I would really encourage our communities to tap into that resource to build better and separated facilities for our more vulnerable road users like walkers and cyclists.
That's great information, Tony. What is your contact information so that people can reach out to you?
So my email address, which is usually the best way to contact me, is tony.katie@state.co.us. And my name is spelled T-O-N-Y, and my last name is C-A-D-Y. And people can find it online too. If they type in CDOT Region 5 planning, my name will come up and I can point them in the right direction, and I can let them know about those transportation planning region meetings where they can come and talk to folks about the projects that they'd like to see in their areas and really find out some more information about these other grant programs that would allow, you know, the city of Alamosa to tap into those funds and really improve conditions for cyclists and walkers in their community. I know the town of Monte Vista has been successful in getting some of these funds, and the town of Del Norte recently applied for and received some TAP funding to improve some sidewalks and some bike lanes in their community. So the money's out there. We just need people to aggressively go after it so that we can fund these improvements in other areas of the state.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Tony. We've been talking with Tony Cady, the Planning and Environmental Manager for the Colorado Department of Transportation, specifically Region 5, which includes the southwestern part of the state. Thanks so much, Tony, for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The city of Alamosa, in its master plan, had a way to facilitate bicycling on the eastbound 6th Street in Alamosa. However, as Brian Pucciarella noted, the city didn't follow the plan, and we are left wondering why.
And then we lost our bike lane through downtown Alamosa. Hopefully, that's a wash later on when downtown gets revitalized. But we were promised a multimodal path on 6th Street. That was kind of the exchange with this downtown revitalization plan. But then last year they put in two new parking lots that are now kind of blockades towards our 8-foot multimodal path we were supposed to get. So it seems like cyclists kind of lost out in that exchange now. On the plan, we were supposed to get bike lanes on 4th and 6th, bike lanes on 4th, and a protected cycling path on 6th Street.
Both Harry Reynolds, Alamosa's Public Works Director, and Rachel Baird, the city's Director of Development Services, couldn't join us today. However, back in November, Harry and Rachel were in the studio, and here's what they said about the work on 6th Street and the challenges of coordinating work on a road that is managed by both the state and the city.
You know, if any proposed development on 6th Street is going to be a challenge. The infrastructure is there and can be utilized, but working with CDOT certainly has its own challenges, you know, trying to work with them and get them on board. You know, it takes a lot of time and a lot of energy and resources.
I think that some of the growing pains we're going through now as a community where, I think half of our constituents are on board with some of the changes in Alamosa, and everyone else just doesn't really believe it's true or doesn't want it to change. I think it's all happening organically. I think the private sector drives a lot of it. And then a lot of the capital improvement projects that are happening, whether it's downtown or housing or the things Harry's working on, like it's going to be a different city in 2030. And it's just, I've said it before, but we just have to make sure we're steering the ship. So Alamosa is still Alamosa, and it's still the same people living here, and we still love our community, but the change is coming regardless, and I think it's going to be really amazing.
Next up, we've got a look ahead at some events happening in the blooming spring. Every Thursday night at 5:30 p.m., join SLV Go on their nature run and walks. These outings are a great way to get out with people and enjoy a dose of nature therapy. All age groups and experience levels are welcome. The Alamosa Wildlife Refuge will be hosting a grand opening for the new visitor center April 19th from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. The Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center can be found at 7824 El Rancho Lane, just east of Alamosa. This grand opening is a way to meet refuge staff, share a snack with them, and learn about the Wildlife Refuge. From 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. that night, there will be a staff-guided walking tour of the refuge. For more information, contact Suzanne Bouchain at 719-588-3473 or Suzanne_Bouchain at fws.gov. And that is Suzanne_Bouchain. Haine at fws.gov. Beginning on Saturday, April 20th, and extending through to July 13th, the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuges invite you to join them on their Saturday morning bird walks. The walks begin at 8 a.m. and will go to about noon. For additional information, please call Evert Brown at 307-315-8003. Remember, the Valley Calendar is the most comprehensive listing of events from across the San Luis Valley. Be sure to check it out, submit your own events, and stay up to date at alamosacitizen.com. Next up, we have a little outdoor news. If you didn't see the word around town 2 weekends ago, it's mountain lion season in Alamosa. It's important to know that as you go out and enjoy the longer days and the warmer air, you may not be alone. Our trails and river areas are prime mountain lion habitats. They are most active between dusk and dawn and are often alone. It's important to remember that you're in mountain lion territory and you can minimize your chances of an encounter by keeping situational awareness, hiking with friends, making noise, and recreating during the day. If you do see a mountain lion, don't panic and run away. Your best defense is to make a lot of noise and make yourself appear as large as possible. Back away slowly, but don't turn around or bend down to pick anything up. If you're attacked, fight back. In other news, it's springtime, which means winds and dry vegetation and a high chance for critical fires. Also, a fair amount of pollen in the air. Alamosa and most of the San Luis Valley have been under fire weather watches or entire red flag warnings most of the past week, and they may remain in place for some time. During these times of high fire danger, remember to be mindful of using machinery near dried grass and vegetation. Keep an eye out for burn bans. Don't throw cigarettes from a car, and avoid driving in dry areas with tall grass. To stay up to date on emergencies in the San Luis Valley, residents can sign up for free emergency alerts at slve911.org. The Colorado Bureau of Land Management just announced that it is seeking public nominations for individuals that hold state, county, or local elected office to serve on the Rocky Mountain Resource Advisory Council, or RAC. This citizen-based council assists in the development of recommendations that address public land management issues within BLM-managed public lands in the state of Colorado. Nominations will be accepted through May 16th. For more information, please contact statewide RAC coordinator Kirby Lynn Shedlowski at 303-239-3671. The Upper Rio Grande Basin ended its snow season at 95% of median and 76% of the median peak. It wasn't the greatest snow year, but it certainly was refreshing. As runoff begins to occur, expect to see a little more water in the rivers and perhaps more people wading around, too. As we close this episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast and part two of our series, Bicycling in the San Luis Valley, I'd like to share some simple rules of the road when bicycling. Here are some of the official bicycling laws in Colorado. And for a more complete set of bicycling laws, you can simply go to bicyclecolorado.org and look up rules. First of all, every person riding a bike shall have all of the rights and duties applicable to the driver of any other vehicle. When riding a bike, do so in the right-hand lane. If you are being overtaken by another vehicle, ride as far to the right as practicable. However, it may be necessary for you to avoid hazardous conditions, including but not limited to fixed or moving objects, parked or moving vehicles, pedestrians, animals, or surface hazards like gravel, broken glass. Typically, you should ride single file. You can ride two abreast as long as it does not impede the normal and reasonable movement of traffic. Or if you're riding on a path or a part of the roadway set aside for exclusive use of bicycles, please keep one hand on the handlebars at all time. And when you make a turn, signal the turn in advance. So the signal for a left-hand turn is your left arm extended straight out from you. For a right-hand turn, there are two legal signals. One is to have your left hand extended, a right angle turn at the elbow so that you have an L shape. Another legal signal for a right-hand turn is to extend your right arm out in the direction of the turn. Any person riding a bicycle upon or along a sidewalk or across a roadway and along a crosswalk should yield the right of way to any pedestrian and give an audible signal before overtaking and passing such pedestrians. Now, in terms of motorists, the biggest rule that that motorists need to follow is that it is Colorado law to give a bicyclist at least 3 feet of space when passing. That means do not buzz a bicyclist by passing in less than 3 feet. So just imagine the bicyclist is holding an arm straight out. That's going to be the minimum safe distance by which you can pass. And if you pass with less than that, you are breaking the law. Now, I do have a few other hints and recommendations for riding, and that is always wear a helmet. You know, it's not required by law to wear a helmet, but a fall from a bicycle seat if you have a bare head could cause a skull fracture. I know that I have fallen in the past while riding a helmet, and I could feel the impact of the helmet on the road surface. It wasn't pleasant, but it didn't knock me out. It's always a good idea also, especially if you're out riding on a road, to wear a pair of gloves. It's really to protect your hands in the event of a fall. It's not to make your hands more comfortable on the handlebars necessarily, although that is an added benefit. But I have seen too many people with palms that were shredded because they were not wearing the bike when they somehow fell on the bike and dragged their hand across the road's surface. Also, it's a good idea to let people know where you're going. If you're going out on a longer bike ride, you know, maybe tell a friend or a spouse or a significant other where you're planning to go in case there's an issue. All right, we'll be back in May with part three of our bicycling series. In part three, we will explore the recreational scene for cycling, and we'll also talk to Sean Noonan, recreational planner for the Federal Bureau of Land Management, on the world-class mountain biking trails around the valley. And of course, we'll hear from more bicyclists.
I feel pretty safe most of the time. I mean, I think if I'm going on a really ambitious ride and I'm going up a pass, you know, and there's a lot of trucks like going up Poncha Pass, it can, even though there's a really good that can be a little intimidating. But closer to Alamosa and in town, I don't know, I feel pretty safe most of the time.
And that brings us to the end of this episode. We encourage you to take our bicycle survey, which you can find on the homepage of alamosacitizen.com. Doing so will help gain a better understanding of just how many bicycle riders there are in our hometown of Alamosa and the greater San Luis Valley. I took the survey. It's only about 10 minutes, no more than that. You can add a little bit of comment. You don't have to just say yes or no. So until our next podcast, this is Marty saying thank you for listening to The Outdoor Citizen, supported by SLV Go and produced by Owen Woods. Have a good spring, and I'll see you out on the trails.